When the servers go down, we'll tell you what's up. You're listening to Realm Maintenance.
Ladies and gentlemen, Horde and Alliance, podcasters and podcastees, welcome to episode 247 of Realm Maintenance, recorded on November 7th of 2017. My name is Ro. Thank you, as always, for downloading. And, well, BlizzCon 2017 is in the books. Everyone's back home, including me. Some are recovering from con crud. Thankfully not me. Knock on wood. Though, I did get the show out just a little bit late this week. I am sorry about that. As soon as I got back from vacation, offline life attacked, and so did work, and vacation ended a little shorter than I expected it to. But, hey, things happen. Today is a really great show, because it's, you know, my recap of BlizzCon and my experience with BlizzCon. Normally, the show tends to feature a whole bunch of small interviews with podcasters and community members, and, well, that's not going to happen this time around, and I'll explain that later. But, that being said, I do have a great interview with Hearthstone game designer Mike Donay and concept artist Jamaro Kindred, and you'll hear that in just a moment. First up, let's attempt the impossible with a little help from Wowhead as we go around the World of Warcraft and BlizzCon in 80 seconds. World of Warcraft Battle for Azeroth was announced as the next expansion. Key features of the expansion include the new continents of Kul Tiras and Zandalar, Uncharted Island Expedition scenarios with advanced AI, a 20-player cooperative experience known as Warfronts, which borrows from Warcraft's RTS roots, and the introduction of three new unlockable allied races for both the Horde and the Alliance. For those caring less about the future and more about the good old days of WoW, you're in luck as World of Warcraft Classic Edition is officially in development. Hanzo from Overwatch and Alex Straza from Warcraft were announced as the next two heroes to be entering the Nexus. Other heroes announcements included a major gameplay update in 2018, changes being made to the game camera, performance-based matchmaking, laning improvements, and voice chat. Kobolds and Catacombs is the next Hearthstone expansion with a brand new single-player mode called the Dungeon Run. Key elements of this 135-card set include legendary weapons for all 9 classes, the new keyword Recruit, and Spellstone cards that can be upgraded during the course of the game. Blizzard World was introduced as the latest map in Overwatch, with the newest support hero being Moira. Fans were also treated to a new cinematic focused on Reinhardt called Honor and Glory. And finally, this year's Blizzard Esports champions include South Korea for the Overwatch World Cup, MVP Black in Heroes of the Storm HGC, ABC in the WoW Arena World Championship, and Rogue in the StarCraft WCS Global Finals.
Time's up. Let's do this.
So, there's not going to be a podcast news section this week because, well, I don't have a whole lot of time, and honestly, every show's worth checking out. That's usually how BlizzCon Week works. Now, I will give you the weekly podcast roundup near the end of the show, so don't worry. BlizzCon gives tons of podcasts out there some great content, and several of them will include access to special interviews, including this one. I received an opportunity to talk with game designer Mike Donay and concept artist Jamaro Kindred, two members of Team 5, about Hearthstone's next expansion, Kobolds and Catacombs. I hope you enjoy this interview, and kinda pardon the sound quality, this was, after all, recorded on an iPhone microphone. I'll talk to you on the other side.
Alright, so I am here with Jamaro Kindred and Mike Donay on the Hearthstone team. Very excited to ask them some questions about Kobolds and Catacombs, the next Hearthstone expansion coming out in December. Mike, I'll start off with you. What is the one element of this expansion set that you are the most excited about?
Super excited about the flavor, the going into treasures, playing the single player experience where you get to level up your character and get extra health and improve your deck as you go. It's a totally free to play, so everybody I think is going to be excited to come back and try it out. And just the leveling experience is something that matches like all the RPGs I've played, you know, like World of Warcraft and paper RPGs. So it's just a super fun idea, and I love how it plays.
And Jamaro, for you, I would imagine being focused on the art aspect of the game, it must be really exciting for you to delve into a very kind of unique art scheme as far as creating this underground world of dungeon delving.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, well, like him, the dungeon run is like my favorite part so far. And it's really awesome because we got to explore, you know, how those kobold caverns would look and the type of traps and creatures that exist down there, even the type of kobolds. So that was definitely a lot of fun. And a lot of that inspiration came from, you know, like the tabletop games and the role-playing games, you know, the pen and paper, you know, type of games. Like, you know, my experience with that is my brother would play these games, and he wouldn't let me play with them, all his older friends. So I would kind of, you know, snag the art books when I could. I mean, the books when I could, and flip through and look at the art. And that was a lot of inspiration for me. So, yeah. So it was like coming back home to be able to do this. It's like every kid's dream, right?
One thing I want to ask, Mike, is with Kobolds and Catacombs, of course, being the last set in the Year of the Mammoth, because of that, when you look at the big picture, it's going to be a set that has a shorter amount of time in the rotation, like when the next next year's rotation, but the year after that. Does that impact your choices for the team in terms of card design? Does that mean that you guys might take more risk on designing cards that maybe have a higher power level overall or a higher impact on what they can do with the meta of the game?
Yeah, we can push a little bit with power level because it's only around for 16 months instead of something like 24 months. But still, 16 months is a long time. So if there's a card that's too powerful and you're playing against it for 16 months, it's not a good experience. One of the things that we do think about, though, is if a deck is leaving in 4 months, and the deck never had its day in the light, is there one more card we want to add to it before it leaves so that it gets some more excitement? We did that a bit with Dragons. We did that a bit with decks that have no duplicates back in Mean Streets of Gadgetzan. There's a bit more of that here. We think about it. We don't do a lot of cards in that space, but sometimes just adding one card to an old deck can make an impact.
You touched on Dragons, and one of the things that you've revealed that's a key part of this set is Legendary Weapons. The one weapon that you've revealed so far being the Priest Legendary Weapon that provides a little bit of a boost to Dragon Priest decks. Kobolds and Catacombs being this kind of dungeon delving experience as it is, can we expect a strong emphasis on dragons similar in scope to, say, what we saw in Black Rock Mountain?
I think it's a great opportunity to include some dragons. It's more about treasure. Like, that's the strongest emphasis. Black Rock Mountain was mostly about dragons. But, you know, with treasure, there is dragons, and with dragons, there is treasure. So there's definitely going to be some. And I think dragons are also just an inherent part of Hearthstone and Warcraft. So I think it's good for us to always have some dragons, you know, running around, breathing fire on people, eating them, looting them, taking their treasure, and putting them back to their lair.
As far as art goes into bringing, like, say, these dragons into life, obviously, in World of Warcraft, which Hearthstone is derived from, there is a very kind of specific art style for how dragons look in many ways. Does Hearthstone continue that, or do you decide to take a direction kind of off the beaten path and go a little crazier with what kind of styles and designs you have for dragons? And also, as you mentioned, kobolds are going to have very different designs.
Sure. Well, actually, like you said, it's derived from World of Warcraft, so you know, we take that initially as our first influence. And of course, we kind of throw that Hearthstone whimsy on as much as we can. If we want something to feel more badass and fierce, we kind of leave it more similar to what, you know, World of Warcraft did initially with it. But, you know, if it's something we're going to take and make into maybe like a baby dragon or something cute, or we want to Hearthstone-ify it, you know, that's what we do. So, yeah, we take some liberties.
Can you say anything about the snow flipper penguin of Kobolds and Catacombs, as it were, as far as candidate for cutest monster that we'll see?
I cannot. I want to wait and see what the players think. So, you know, because what I think is cute, they might not think is cute. So we'll wait and see.
Mike, how does Kobolds and Catacombs interact well with Arena when designing Kobolds and Catacombs? How much attention is being given to the current state of Arena? Because obviously some classes perform higher than others. Does that make a big impact on how you're designing the cards?
We always try to think about Arena as well as all the other factors. There's so many factors in making a good set. One of the things that we've recently been doing in the Arena is the dual class Arena as a special feature. I think doing special features like that as we get sort of later into an expansion, people need something to freshen up. And I think we'll keep experimenting with different things in Arena. There's a panel today in a few hours where we're going to be letting players pick 9 cards that go into Arena for a short event. We're going to keep doing short events like that to keep Arena interesting.
Any idea regarding those events on the frequency of those events? Will this event that we're seeing off of today's choices, will we see that by the end of the year? Or can you elaborate at all about the timeline on Arena events?
This Arena choices that are happening today aren't going to come into the game until early next year. But in general, we want to do a lot of different events. And if we get good feedback, you know, maybe we'll do some more often or we'll do more of them. And as we go, I think we'll learn, and the community will learn what they like. We'll learn what they like, and we'll do more things that they enjoy.
besides Mare and the Fox being available on Monday, can you elaborate on any other promotional things leading up to the launch of Kobolds and Catacombs? Will there be a special themed brawl or any kind of a special event to celebrate the launch of the game that players can get excited about?
For now, it's just Mare and the Fox. They'll get to play that until the expansion comes out in December.
With Dungeon Runs, I look at this as being, in many ways, a new game mode that is very much evergreen content, content that will last for months, even years into the game's run. Has any consideration being given to, over time, as new sets come out, introducing new challenges for characters to face in Dungeon Runs, or is it too early at this point?
Well, recently we've been doing some single-player content with each expansion. So as more and more expansions come out, more and more single-player content will exist. So I think if someone was to join, you know, in a year, they'd have the option to go back and look at all that single-player content and play it. And there's just so many hours of cool stuff and great stories, right? Ice Crown Citadel had such an awesome story and evocative. If people played WoW, I think they would really want to play that again. If people like, you know, Treasure, they'd probably want to play Kobolds and Catacombs single-player content.
Jamaro, can you talk about, like, what's the most exciting element as far as all the different creatures, denizens that we're going to find in the catacombs? What are the most interesting things that you and your team are bringing to life that you're really can't wait to share with the players?
Well, there's so many things, actually. And I think what it is for me is, in sets like this, I work on them early on. So I do the early exploration. So we're trying to figure out what exists in these caverns and things like that. So, like, how do you take a kobold and, plus one them? So, like, we have a kobold king that exists down there somewhere who he's a little wiser. He's a little smarter than the rest of the kobolds. So instead of having a candle, he uses a lantern. So, I mean, just discovering things like that. I don't want to share too much about that because I want them to experience some of these creatures and some of these things and have it be a surprise. But it was just fun exploring all of the caverns and all the catacombs and just find out all the traps and all the creatures that exist down there. So I think it was just all fun. I can't think of anything that wasn't fun to work on. So hopefully the players will appreciate all that and enjoy it as much as I enjoyed creating it.
What kind of other sources of inspiration you have for bringing the world of kobolds and catacombs to life?
Well, like you said, World of Warcraft was a huge inspiration for me. I mean, there's already a lot of rich lore there and a lot of rich characters. And there were some that don't exist. For example, like the sentient fungi characters. Like, that's just stuff we get to explore and have fun and create for Hearthstone. So we actually have a good chance to, like, you know, create our own characters and our own creatures. And so that's some stuff you can expect. And that was really fun to explore.
And like Tortolans, they may end up in the future expansion. You never know.
Hey, yeah, the Tortolans are beautiful. Actually, my fellow artist, Jeremy Masco, he's the mastermind behind those Tortolans.
All right. Another question regarding Arena, something that I see brought up on other podcasts, especially like, say, Lightforge podcast. I'm sure you're familiar with. They go heavily into Arena. Arena tends to have somewhat of a special rule set when you consider offering rates on different kinds of cards. Certain cards are going to appear more than others, and of course you have micro adjustments that are made over the course of time in Arena depending on what's performing well and what's probably a little OP. Do you have any concerns about somewhat of a lack of transparency for, like, the common player playing Arena not realizing that, hey, going into this, you're going to see X card far more often than you're going to see Y? Are any considerations being given to just make that Arena rule set a little more transparent for the newcomer to Arena?
I'd say about 90% of players, none of that is visible to them. Like, they don't care about that. They see three cards, they pick one that excites them or they think is good, and they see three more cards and they pick that one. They play their games, they respond to what's being played against them. They really don't care about, you know, whether a card is at an 87% drop rate or a 93% drop rate or something like that.
Are there any expected card adjustments being made for existing cards going prior to the launch of Kobolds and Catacombs? I know that usually a big patch or a big set introduction is as good an opportunity as any to decide, hey, we see that this card may be overperforming, it may need to be mildly adjusted. Is there anything you can share on that this time?
So recently we've been doing our balance changes between expansion releases. You know, about 2 months in is a good time because the meta stabilized a little bit. People have figured out what's good, they figured out what they don't like, what they're angry at, and we can address that. We made some changes to Druid and some other cards. When a new expansion releases, people don't yet know what's going to happen because everything is new and there's tons of new cards and decks. So we like to wait a little bit, you know, see if there's actually anything that needs to be changed and then change the appropriate things.
Of the cards that have been revealed so far that we know about, which card is exciting you the most in Kobolds and Catacombs?
I think the Carnivorous Cube has got a lot of upside, right? It's a 5-mana 4/6, Battle Cry, destroy a friendly minion, and Death Rattle, summon two copies of it. If you use that on something like the Raptor Egg, you're going to get a 5/5 when you play it, and then when it dies, you're going to get two more eggs. If you feign death or something like that, play dead, you get a whole bunch more stuff. So it's got a huge potential.
It'd have to be Ren. Ren the First Disciple. That whole story, that working up to that deck destruction is something I look forward to. So that's kind of what I go after.
Awesome. Now, one thing that's been brought by a couple of my peers regarding dungeon runs is, from what I understand, you get a card back for completing the dungeon run on each of the classes being 8 characters, right?
If you beat all 8 bosses with all 9 classes, that's 72 wins. Then yes, you get a special card back, a lantern themed card back, to show off the Kobold King's sort of lantern that he wears on his head, and symbolize that. But mostly they're for fun, right? We give you the legendary weapon up front. We give you the booster packs up front because we don't want you to play just to get the rewards. If you want to play ranked, play ranked. If you enjoy the adventure mode or the dungeon run mode, which we think you will, play that.
Fun is what it's all about. And I play a lot of World of Warcraft, and I'm an altaholic. So the fact that I can get into this this dungeon run and try, you know, maybe a shaman, because I don't play a lot of shaman, and experience it without a lot of fear of maybe building a huge deck around something, I can just kind of have fun and explore. And I think that's going to be an exciting part of the dungeon run as well.
Are there any plans to incorporate any kind of quest with the dungeon run system, or is it its own thing, standing alone from any possible quests that might be introduced?
No quest stuff that we want to talk about right now.
Expansion releases tend to be a good opportunity to make adjustments to the game as a whole. I know there's been a lot of talk, of course, about ranked play, and there's been some discussion from members of the dev team realizing that they've acknowledged that ranked play needs some adjustments to be made at some point in the future. Will we see any ranked play adjustments made at the launch of this expansion, or is that more a consideration for, say, the next year rotation?
Right, we're not planning to make any ranked play adjustments this year, but I'll talk about our goals for ranked play.
Sure.
One of the things we want to do is make the experience at the end of the month a little bit more fun and a little bit more appropriate for the different skill levels. So we want the expert players who hit very high rank to not fall quite as far, so they don't have to play so many games to get to their appropriate rank. And we also want the people who are playing at the lower ranks to not have to play against those players. So when we do make adjustments in the future, it'll be around those ideas.
What has been the largest amount of feedback that you've received from the previous two sets in Year of the Mammoth? And can you elaborate on how you've applied that feedback in designing Kobolds and Catacombs? Go ahead, in terms of art, I'd be really interested in that.
It's interesting because our expansions are so different that usually they don't apply in a great deal. Like for example, Knights of the Frozen Throne, you know, turning all of our heroes into Death Knights. That doesn't really apply to Kobolds and Catacombs. It's just a different challenge. It was a different experience. It's always new for me, and it always keeps me excited. So, hopefully people enjoy the Death Knights, and hopefully people will enjoy all the crazy stuff they find in Kobolds and Catacombs. So, it's kind of on an expansion by expansion basis for me.
One of the main things that we think about is just making things a little bit different. We learn things like if you make cards just very generally useful. It can make the ladder feel boring because you see it in a lot of classes, so we always try to make things a little bit more specific. You'll see a lot of the legendary weapons are very specific. The priest one, you need to play a lot of cheap spells. The mage one lets you draw effectively 4 cards a turn, so you want to have a very low-cost deck. Also, the spell stones are all very specifically built around cards, right? We showed off the druid one. We have to get 3 armor to upgrade it, so you're going to have to put some armor gain cards in your deck. Specifically with that one, though, you can just hero power 3 times across 3 turns, and that will also upgrade it because it saves your progress as you go. All the spellstones are like that. There's one in each class, and they all have very specific upgrade conditions.
And touching on legendary weapons really quick, as far as the legendary weapons go, would you say that they kind of serve a similar function to quests in Un'Goro and Death Knight hero cards, in that it's a very powerful card that more often than not players are going to want to build a deck around to make the most use of it?
Yeah, I think most of them are very specifically build a deck around them, but also they could go in existing decks. Like there's a spell priest deck where you play a lot of spells and pyromancers and things like that, Lyra. And I think that Dragon Soul very naturally falls into that deck, but it's still a very unique priest deck. It's not like the Dragon Priest or Big Priest. So I think you'll continue to see legendary weapons that fall in that space.
How big of an impact do you feel Recruit is going to have on the game going into the next couple of sets?
I think Recruit is pretty fun to experiment with. We showed off the Gather Your Party, which is the Warrior Recruit card. It costs 6 mana. It recruits a minion from your deck of any size. So what you want to do is not include minions that cost basically less than 8 mana, or else you'll accidentally recruit them. And that's a very unique type of warrior. Normally they play Acolyte of Pain and Armorsmith and things like that. So you're going to be playing a control warrior with just really big threats. And the same with the other recruit cards. They're very specific. The other one we showed off, Guild Recruiter, is a 5-mana minion that recruits a minion from your deck that costs 4 or less. So that's going to make you not want to play any minions that cost 1 or 2. And the minions that cost 4, you're going to look very specifically, very closely at. Do you want to play, you know, like Injured Blade Master? Do you want to play, a 4-mana 7-7 or something like that, and then recruit those?
It feels like that design somewhat inspired by the trio of Prince cards that we saw in Frozen Throne, where casting cost is going to matter a lot more in deck construction. Would you agree there? Are we going to see beyond that one recruiter where casting cost matters? Will we see other cards, whether it's Recruit or otherwise, where the casting cost definitely plays a part in whether or not you want to include it?
Yeah, when we design a set, there's a whole bunch of different build arounds we do. Like sometimes we do Dragons or Murlocs, and we've explored that space. And another space that we want to explore is casting cost. And we did that with, like you said, you know, in the previous set a little bit, and there'll be a bunch of different recruit cards that look at casting cost also.
In general, just looking at the game from a big picture stance, how much have you enjoyed Hearthstone? And for the player, because there's still tons of players out there that may be a little shy to try out a new game like Hearthstone. There's plenty of people who haven't touched this stuff yet. There's millions of players, but there's millions more that can play this game. With this set in particular, what's the one thing that you would say to them to excite them and interest them into giving this set and giving the game as a whole a try?
So for a new player, like I mentioned previously, the dungeon run. Get in there, explore the different classes, explore the different cards and treasures. There's not a lot to worry about. It's safe. It's a safe environment, as safe as it can be to be in a catacomb and dungeon. But enjoy that part. That's a good first step into Hearthstone if you're a new player.
Yeah, after you try out the dungeon run stuff, we have some decks built into the client now where you can just let the computer build a deck for you using the cards that you happen to own, and it chooses some of your best cards when it does that. And we also have some suggested decks. You can look at see which one you own the most cards from and try to play that deck and fill it out with, if you don't own all the cards, then use the autocomplete and it'll just put your best cards in the empty slots.
All right, Mike Jamaro, thank you very much for your time. I'm very much looking forward to the next expansion, and it should be a blast. Thank you much, guys.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
Thanks again to Blizzard Entertainment and to Mike and Jamaro for that opportunity. It's once again time for your weekly podcast roundup. The following is a quick rundown of every podcast covering a Blizzard franchise that I'm aware of that posted an episode between October 30th and November 6th of 2017. For General Blizzard Podcast, we have All Things Azeroth, Blizzard Umbrella, Blizzard Watch, Blue Recluse, Battle.net News, Frozen Nerds, Geeks of Azeroth, Ice of Veins, The Insus, and The Weekly Blizz. World of Warcraft podcasts include the AIE Podcast, Arcane Analysis, Chaos Portal, Corpse from Radio Control, while Dark Moon Herald, Daughters of Azeroth, Final Boss, Frazzlecast, Girls Gone Wild, Lion's Pride Tavern, Lore Watch, Merely a Setback, Middle Finger Podcast, Pwncast, Raiding Militia, The Starting Zone, The Summoning Stone, Tankcast, The Torrent and the Goblin, Technically PvP, Unshackled Fury, World of Warcast, Wild Talk, and Wowhead Weekly. Inside the tavern for Hearthstone, we have 16 Iron Dusty, Eric Chicken, The Round the Hearth, Brewmasters, Coin Conceived, Fireside Talks, Golden Wisp, Happy Hearthstone, Hearth Coach, Hero Powercast, The Light Forge, Off Curve, Tier 5 Podcast, Top Deck Kings, Velen's Chosen, Walk to Work, and Well Met. Shattered Soulstone is your Diablo podcast for this week. Heroes of Storm podcasts include Core, Into the Nexus, Lords of Storm, The Nexus Trolls, and Trollin' HGC. And finally, for Overwatch, we have High Noon, Junkertown FM, Omnic Lab, The Overcast, The Overview, Overwatchers, Watchpoint, and Waifus of Overwatch. You can catch a weekly podcast roundup as part of this podcast and the Rolling Restart podcast. For links to all these great shows and more of your favorite Blizzard franchise podcasts, go to realm-maintenance.com. With that business out of the way, that brings us to a special BlizzCon edition of the RNG segment. What does RNG stand for? Well, this week, let's say it stands for ramen noodle generosity. Seriously, I have the utmost respect for the vegetables, meat, and broth, but really, when it comes to myself and ramen, I really appreciate a ramen house that gives plenty of delicious noodles. Alright, so where do I begin with BlizzCon 2017? I got there last week on Wednesday, and I did that to give myself a little extra time to just settle into Anaheim and get ready and get prepared, because you can never be too prepared, right, Illidan? I want to give a big shout out to @PerfectNomad on Twitter and Solified. Solified is a listener of this show who also happens to work at Medieval Times with @PerfectNomad on Twitter. Solified played the role of the Red Knight when myself and Ben and John from Azeroth Roundtable, Thorn and Thist from Lagging Balls, Nevermore, Joss, a whole bunch of us went to go to Medieval Times on Wednesday, and it was a heck of a great time. We had so much fun. We lost our voices and went crazy cheering on the Red Knight, who happened to have Horde symbol insignias on his bracers, so oddly enough, the Red Knight won! So our cheering and our support and our battle cry of For the Horde paid off. The Red Knight won the day. It was really probably the most enjoyable experience I've had at Medieval Times. There are several in the nation, in the United States rather, and if you have one near you, I highly recommend the experience even once, because it is quite something special. Thursday was the biggest workday for me, because Thursday was, well, Con Before the Storm and World of Podcast, the 5th annual World of Podcast. It was a great turnout. Apparently we had about 8,000 people attend over the course of the night. That can lead to a lot of chaos, a lot of frantic stuff going around. I felt like a chicken running around with my head cut off. I put in a lot more work on Thursday night than I expected to. And to those of you who saw me and probably saw that I looked really stressed out and stuff, that happens with me with the World of Podcasts. But quite honestly, it's worth it in the end, because most everyone I talked to enjoyed it. Going forward, there are some things that happened with this past year's World of Podcasts I do want to build on and correct and improve. For one thing, I do think that the sound quality for the podcasting panel could have been much better. In fact, it should have been with the same kind of equipment and quality on par with all the other panels. I intend to correct that next year if I'm involved with World of Podcasts. I would like to run two panels simultaneously with the same quality of recording. And quite honestly, if you get frustrated that you can't catch all the panels at World of Podcasts, well, welcome to BlizzCon. Because that's going to happen at BlizzCon whether you like it or not anyhow. So I think that's going to be the plan going forward on World of Podcasts. Two panels at the same time gives more people a chance to participate, I think, too. And when we have so many people wanting to be a part of this, how can we not have two different panels going on at the same time? So a look into the future, at least if I have a hand in World of Podcasts next year, which I think I should. Friday was BlizzCon opening ceremony day, and there were so many awesome, amazing moments. I would have to say one of the first was just talking before the opening ceremonies with Taliesin and Evitel. You might remember I interviewed them on the last episode of Realm Maintenance. And oddly enough, it just worked out that we were sitting practically right next to each other. They were one row behind me, but as we are waiting the hour that it took before the opening ceremony to start, we're just talking about World of Warcraft and what we think's going to happen. And I imparted some of my BlizzCon knowledge to them about where they should go and what they should do with media access and all that stuff. And we weren't alone. We were joined, of course, by Pat Crane, John Jagger, Gizmo, and Thist. And I want to give a bit of a shout out to Pat Crane. I know that during different points of BlizzCon, he recorded kind of a behind the scenes series of segments, and you can catch that on the latest episode of Convert to Raid this week. You'll hear myself on it along with all the people that I mentioned. Now, the opening segment of the opening ceremony always seems to be very emotional. I remember last year's was emotional, and this one was an emotional one in a different way too, and it made me tear up a bit because, well, I'm a sentimental nerd, and just the segment went to talk about how much of an impact that Blizzard games have made on people's lives, and I think about the impact that it's made on my life, and it absolutely has. It is something extraordinarily special. My life is forever altered because of Blizzard games. I wish I had a few moments to say something on that segment, so I'll just say it here. Blizzard games changed my life. They've changed the lives of so many people, podcasters, content creators, you name it. And I think that opening segment, you could throw so many people into that, and it could last like 2-3 hours, and it wouldn't get old. I'd still listen and watch the whole thing. Anyhow, onward to the ceremony itself. I'll try to go down in order of how everything played out. Of course, we had Mike Morhaime on stage, did his little usual spiel about what a great year it's been, and then esports is awesome, and yes, I agree with all of that. We got the StarCraft II. It was announced to be free-to-play, which is cool. People get Wings of Liberty or Heart of the Storm for free, depending on what they have. Now, this was the one game I didn't try to demo out, though, for like the new co-op commander and such, so I do apologize, I can't really give a first hands-on experience with that demo. Every other game I did play quite a bit of, including Heroes of the Storm, and Alexstrasza and Hanzo being introduced did not seem to surprise so many people, as they were predicted based on a number of leaks. We still have no Deckard Cain. I don't know how much longer I can stay a while and listen and wait for Deckard Cain to be introduced. I'm beginning to wonder if it'll ever happen at all. We will see. The biggest thing about Heroes of the Storm announcements, at least for me, was performance-based matchmaking. That really stood out amongst all of the changes and additions. Because, quite frankly, guys, I'm a scrub player at Heroes of the Storm. I recognize this. I know this. I'm a Bronze League hero, you might say. It's not fair to myself, nor is it fair to people who play at a much higher level that we be matched up with each other on the same team. Quite frankly, those people that are higher skilled should not have to deal with people like me pulling them down. People like myself should not have to worry necessarily about people at a much higher skill level chastising us left and right because we don't know how to play the game right. I just want to have fun playing Heroes of the Storm, and I think being matched with players of a similar skill level ultimately is better for the game. Hearthstone was probably my favorite part of the entire opening ceremony, and it was a huge surprise that it was not a pirate set, as everyone had dreaded and feared in the few days leading up to it. It was hilarious what kind of troll it is. It had to be deliberate that they used Marin the Fox in that way to kind of fool people into, oh hey, pirates. Pirates are coming. And just a couple other things that made people think it'd be a pirate set, and it is absolutely not. Kobolds and Catacombs is, well, it's a Dungeons & Dragons theme with a Warcraft flavor twist, and yes, I'm going to say Dungeons & Dragons because that's obviously where they're going with this, even though they can't say it officially. I can say it officially. It's Dungeons & Dragons meets Warcraft. It's awesome. The single-player dungeon run mode, which is going to be free for everyone when the expansion comes out. I tried that demo. It was the first demo that I played at BlizzCon, and it was a wonderful experience. I was so excited about it. I love the first portion of this dungeon run. I beat all 3 bosses. I'm ready to beat all 8 bosses with 9 classes, get that card back, and then probably even play more after that because it's just fun. And I really like fun stuff. On to Overwatch. Overwatch had some killer announcements. Of course, Blizzard World looks great. Don't we all wish Blizzard World was real? Is there anyone who doesn't want Blizzard World that listens to this podcast? Now, Moira, the new support character that was introduced, seems pretty crazy. I know she's going to be on the PTR this week, so I will be playing her and testing her out. I actually didn't have time to play Moira because, well, I wanted to play on the Blizzard World map, and I didn't want to play Moira versus Moira versus Moira, so I just played a traditional game in Blizzard World in my demo. And it turned out well. The cinematic, of course, for Reinhardt was awesome. If we get cinematics at this kind of frequency throughout the year, give me another, and another, and another. We wrap up the opening ceremony with World of Warcraft. And when J. Allen Brack said he wanted to take a moment to talk about ice cream, already you could hear people in the crowd lose their minds. If you listen to the virtual ticket, you'll hear it. As soon as he said ice cream, the first thing going through my mind is, oh no, they're not. They aren't really going to do this, are they? I'm not saying that as if I dread it. I'm just like in disbelief thinking this can't be the whole vanilla legacy server announcement. And yep, WoW Classic is going to be a thing. My prediction, and of course I'm amazing at BlizzCon predictions, right? Because it, just listen to the last show, compared to all the things that happen, you'll see I suck at Blizzard predictions. So my BlizzCon prediction is that WoW Classic's going to take at least 2 years to get right, if they want to make it mechanically like the original WoW. We won't see it next year. I think it'll be kind of playable next year, but this one's going to take a while. It's a good thing that they are committed to making an effort to get things done with this this legacy server classic project, and I'm sure that they are going to win back a lot of players because of it. Now, Battle for Azeroth. You know, this expansion is everything I didn't realize I wanted. I need to play both sides this time around, because quite frankly, I love the lore. I think Alliance versus Horde, or Horde versus Alliance, however you put it, is a great theme for Warcraft. You can't have World of Warcraft without war, right? And this feels like Mists of Pandaria, but cranked up a few notches on the faction conflict, and I'm cool with that. Another thing that reminds me of Mists of Pandaria, Island Expeditions. Because, oh my gosh, 3-player scenarios with really, really randomized content and advanced player AI, scenarios were so good in Mists of Pandaria. I am a scenario freak. I know Island Expeditions are going to be my jam. I'm really looking forward to them. Of course, I'm looking forward to Warfronts and Allied Races as well. All of that's good stuff. That cinematic was fucking nuts. From there, on Friday, I stayed for, of course, the WoW What's Next panel. Got to learn more about Island Expeditions, which, you know, again, super scenarios, all great for that. I did have questions about Warfronts and how they would work, and of course, one of my questions about Warfronts would later on get asked and answered in the Q&A on Saturday. As far as Allied Races go, I'm glad they're there. I'm glad they're a thing. I don't think that's something that I'm going to do, because you guys know that I mainly play one character, and if I'm going to play two characters, it'll be one Horde character, one Alliance character. I'm not really going to have room for Allied Races, so it's not my thing. It's not designed for me, but for all those people who love World of Warcraft and love many alts, or have many alts, high control alt, wow, Allied Races are going to be right up their alley. So after those Warcraft panels, I had lunch, checked out the systems panel, I saw some of the questions I had about Warfronts answered, but not all of them. From there, I played demos, including Hearthstone, WoW, and I need to talk about WoW demos at BlizzCon, because this is going to be a little controversial. I'm excited for Battle of Azeroth, right? I'm really loving the idea of Horde versus Alliance, the whole Island Expedition, Warfronts, all that stuff. I'm totally excited for that. The demos for Battle of Azeroth were a pair of dungeons and some questing leveling experience. Now, I understand that it's important to have that stuff in because people want to play it, give feedback, and all of that. I have to say, when it comes to Battle for Azeroth, my only criticism on the demos is that I wish that the demo experience had been an Island Expedition. And yes, I'm totally biased towards Island Expeditions because I love myself some scenario content, but I was really hoping that they would be able to have that scenario content available for us to play so that we could get a really good feel of what that's all about. Island scenarios, the Island Expeditions seem to be their most dynamic content that they're working on. Warfronts look pretty dynamic too, but Island Expeditions in particular is something that I really wanted to try on a demo station. I was a little disappointed that the content on the demo stations was, well, the kind of stuff that really I'm going to be doing when the game is launched, when the game is live, and it's not anything that's really revolutionary or thinking outside the box. So, mixed feelings about the WoW demo. I obviously don't have bad thoughts about the expansion as a whole, as a concept and everything like that. I just wish that the demos had been more representative of the things that are going to make Battle for Azeroth special. That said, I'm still very excited about WoW and what it's going to bring. Friday night was the CTR party, and the CTR party is great every year. This year, a whole lot of things made the CTR party and my experience there special. And among them, most of all, was running into a human being, a hell of a human being, who I did not expect I'd run into, and that is Coltrane, who you may remember from, you know, the earlier days of Convert to Raid. And, man, this is the second time that I've met Coltrane in person, and the first time was so magical and awesome, and Coltrane and I, you know, we've had small conversations now and then since, you know, the beginning that I've known him. And I've always had just nothing but the utmost respect for this guy. He is not just a legendary podcaster for World of Warcraft, but he's just an all-around good human being. He is one of the nicest, most genuine people I know. He is one of the best people to meet at BlizzCon and to share the hype and just the experience that BlizzCon is. And I don't know if I'll see him next year, or the year after that, or the year after that. It took a few years for me to run into Coltrane again. So, who knows when it's going to happen again. But you know what, Coltrane? If you're listening to this, brother, thank you. You made my Friday night. Your presence with your infectious enthusiasm, and you just made my Friday. So, thank you. Also, I found out while that was going on that Kaz from the Worgen's Howl won the costume contest as Hogger. See, I didn't jinx it because I didn't go there to watch it myself, although I really wanted to. I decided to do the CTR party, and then Kaz wins first place. Guys, she was sick as a dog the day before BlizzCon started. She worked on Hogger, man, to the last minute getting that sucker ready, and it paid off so well, but what a story that is, you know? I'm so freaking proud of Kaz. Again, Kaz, if you're listening from the Worgen's Howl, congratulations, girl. You are amazing. You are an inspiration. I am so happy for you, and I'm happy for both you and Frosty. You guys are amazing people. I'm so glad you won that costume contest. And I suppose the last thing I have to mention when talking about Friday night is that Friday night, more often than not, in previous BlizzCons, would be the night that I would record most of my smaller interviews for the BlizzCon episode of this show. I decided not to do that this year. I think my decision became cemented shortly before meeting Coltrane again. And the reasoning is this. It just kind of hit me that, you know, BlizzCon really does happen once a year. It is never guaranteed if I'm going to go to BlizzCon the following year. And time, as I've said so many times before, time is money. Well, time just in general is invaluable, or I'm finding the wrong word. You know what I mean. Time is precious. You got to make the most out of every moment that you have while you're at BlizzCon. Just meeting people, spending time with people that have listened to you on your shows, spending time with people that I've been listening to for months and years, and meeting entirely new people that I didn't even realize knew me, and meeting people who maybe didn't realize that I knew them. I took more time for me this year at BlizzCon. I don't regret a single bit of it. You guys may get less content in regards of interviews on this episode, and while I'll apologize for that, I'm still not sorry that I did it. I still feel like I made the best decision, not just for myself, but for this podcast. I just re-energizing myself. When I do this show, I never want it to feel like work. And I have to admit, last year, when I did those interviews, it was starting to begin to feel like work, if you know what I mean, rather than just feel like something fun that I do just because it's fun. Now, I'm not saying I'll never do those interviews again. If I feel like I'm in the mood, if I feel like if it's fun, if I feel like it's the right thing next year, maybe I'll do it. It wasn't the right thing to do this year, and it seems like a lot of you understood that when I mentioned on Twitter I wasn't going to do that. So, yeah, that's why this episode is the way it is. And this episode is also partially the way it is because Saturday, I ended up getting a surprise interview for Hearthstone, which you just listened to a short time ago. I did not expect that because, of course, most people know that Realm Maintenance started as a World of Warcraft podcast, and more often than not, we stay on WoW podcast and WoW topics. Had a lot of Overwatch this year, huh? As some people were sending me emails complaining about too much Overwatch. But hey, Overwatch is kind of hot right now. I was really excited to get that opportunity to talk to Hearthstone designers because, quite honestly, Hearthstone is my second favorite Blizzard game, guys. And I probably could do a Hearthstone podcast if I wanted to. I just don't know when I'd have the time to do it. So, yeah, just a great opportunity that I had to grab. It wasn't the only interview I did. I found out about that Hearthstone opportunity while I was getting ready for this group interview that we had teased about with a member of the WoW team, which happened to be Jeremy Fiesel. Now, the audio for that group interview, I think, is going to be available on Convert to Raid or the Starting Zone in the nearest future. I did not record it personally myself. I feel like I repeat myself by saying personally myself, and now I've said that a whole bunch of times. Okay, I need to stop and move on. Anyhow, did not record it myself. You should be able to hear it on those other podcasts. They use their equipment, so you should go to their shows and check it out. It was all in all a great experience, and we found out some stuff, not a whole lot of new stuff that we didn't know before, but still, I'm happy that we had that opportunity, and thank you, Blizzard, for making that possible. So after that interview, I rushed over to the instance, saw the tail end of that. They had quite a full crowd for the instance, which I was extremely happy for. A very different audience, I will say, than the audience that the other WoW podcast had. I think that's all I'll say on that. I think if you watch the virtual ticket, you'll see what I mean. Yeah, I'm just so glad that the instance got the representation that needed. I'm glad that Pat Crane was a part of it too. Just a whole lot of years of work paying off on the biggest stage for Blizzard out there, being BlizzCon. So that was awesome. After that, there was the recording for The Storm, the final part of World of Podcasts. And we had a ton of technical difficulties, but we did get to record it. It's available to listen to right now. Again, improvements will be made on a lot of this stuff in the future. And following that was the WoW Q&A, which, for those of you who may have paid attention, it was the second year that I had the opportunity to ask a question, and I ended up being first in line. Thank you to the person or persons that made that possible. You probably know who you are. I apologize to everyone for giving a guild shout out because I think I caused a chain reaction that gave us the largest number of guild shout outs in the history of BlizzCon. So yeah, maybe next year I won't give a guild shout out. I don't know. The real surprising thing from the Warcraft Q&A was not really any of the answers that we got, but the fact that there was no red shirt guy. And I mentioned, you know, the end of the streak on Twitter, and people got mad about that. They were like, how dare Blizzard not get red shirt guy the opportunity to ask a question? I feel like there's more to this story, and I don't know it all. I think he had a question, and it just wasn't good enough or something, yet a variation of it was asked and answered. I don't know, guys. To be clear here, I'm not the next red shirt guy. I don't ask about lore. I don't think I'm going to be first at the BlizzCon WoW Q&A next year. I will say this. If I end up being first at the WoW Q&A next year, go ahead and call me first in line guy or something. I don't know. I'm not going to wear the same color shirt every year because that's not me. So the rest of Saturday after the WoW Q&A, I spent playing demos for Overwatch and Heroes. And getting two heroes, I feel like the camera change was great. Alexstrasza seems like a fine support character. I think she's available on the PTR this week as well. Hanzo? Oh my gosh, Hanzo. So, I don't like playing Hanzo in Overwatch, and I really, really right now don't like playing Hanzo in Heroes. And it's hard for me to describe my frustration, but he just feels clunky. It just doesn't translate well for me. You know, not every hero is going to be designed with every kind of player in mind, and Hanzo is not my character. At the same time, I feel like Hanzo may not be the right character for a lot of people, and he probably needs work. So, yeah. Hanzo needs work, Alexstrasza seems fine, camera changes are good. Performance skill-based matchmaking, we're not going to see that till later on in 2018, and that's whether or not that's good or not, we're going to have to play several weeks before we see how that pans out. Finally, Overwatch, I think I mentioned earlier, I didn't play Moira, Blizzard World map was amazing, and while I didn't play StarCraft 2, which had new stuff, I did go to the Diablo station. Yes, there was a Diablo station. Yes, it was located near restrooms, and I had to go to the Diablo stations because I wanted to see what this unique BlizzCon experience was, so that I could tell all of you what that was all about. What were you missing? You missed out on a special Velcro patch for your backpack if you completed the thing, and it was basically a greater rift that had previous bosses in it, so it was like a boss run kind of thing that culminated in fighting old school skin Diablo at the end, kind of like the whole anniversary event. And yeah, I would actually be okay with them including that BlizzCon experience as part of the whole Diablo anniversary thing in January, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do something like that, in addition to the whole, you know, old school graphics thing that they did earlier this year. Really, that kind of sums up a lot of my experience at BlizzCon, just kind of the basic overview. I had dinner that night at PF Chang's, and then, you know, there's that last few hours to hang out at the Hilton, and the Hilton was so loud, guys. I'm not a fan of the DJs. I'm not the party animal that I used to be. I'm not a young man anymore, as Soldier 76 would say. So I didn't stay at the Hilton that long on Saturday night. I went across the street to the Marriott, and the Marriott was a pretty interesting experience, especially because a friend of mine and the listener of this show, Ashanka, had walked up to me in the Marriott and said, "Hey, Ro, can you get out info to people that Antorus is opening on the 28th? And I'm like, how do you know I haven't seen this? And Ashanka explained to me that he had been speaking with J. Allen Brack, who was in the middle of the lobby at the Marriott, and he had asked J. Allen Brack when Antorus was opening up, and apparently he got the answer that was on the 28th. And they had been planning to tell everyone that was opening on the 28th, but never got asked in the WoW Q&A, which blows my mind that it never happened. So I go up to J. Allen Brack at the Marriott. Now, mind you, I'm talking to basically the head guy of World of Warcraft right now. I mean, Ian's a pretty big person on the ladder. I think J. Allen Brack's a little above Ian Hazzacostas. And I go up to him, I'm like, "Hey, you know, great expansion. I'm really looking forward to the Battle for Azeroth. I just have a question for you. You see, this guy said to me that he talked to you, and you said that Antorus was opening on the 28th. And he said, yep, that I did. And he explained the whole thing, and I was like, okay, so you won't mind if I go onto Twitter and send messages to people like Wowhead and stuff that you said it's opening on the 28th? And he said, nope, it's my gift to you. So, first of all, thanks to Ashanka, because I would not have broken the story had it not been for him basically breaking the story to me. And I find it hilarious that MMO Champion chose not to believe me. Now, as I record this, I still think MMO Champion has not mentioned that the 28th is when the raid opens. I don't know if that announcement has been made officially yet, through a Blizzard post or some sort, but expect that to happen this week if it hasn't happened already. So many interesting things happen, and that was a great way to culminate those interesting things. Beyond that, Sunday was the traditional thing I always do, or at least have done for the past couple of BlizzCons, and that is go to Disneyland. I'm not the biggest Disney person myself, but the time that I spend with friends is really what it's all about. There was a lot of fun, a lot of talking, a lot of walking, and at the end of the night, I was exhausted, but as always, it was a happy way on the happiest place on Earth to finish the trip. In many ways, this past BlizzCon felt like it could be called BlizzCon The Force Awakens, because it felt like it was a remake in a lot of ways of my very first BlizzCon. It's very similar, yet many things were also different as well, and yet similar. It's the only way I can explain it, BlizzCon The Force Awakens. If you've seen Star Wars The Force Awakens, you kind of understand what I'm getting at. All said, this BlizzCon was the best one yet, and it is very much in part due to each and every single person that I met. To those of you who I saw at BlizzCon, that walked up to me, that introduced yourselves to me, that, you know, put up with the fact that I can't always remember every face and every name, thank you. All of you are my family. As someone said, BlizzCon is like Christmas, Thanksgiving, a family reunion, and high school prom, all wrapped up to one. And they couldn't be any closer to the truth. It really is all of that and much more. Oh yeah, and add New Year's Eve on top of that. BlizzCon is a wonderful experience. I could only hope that each and every one of you listening to this show at some point gets an opportunity to be there in Southern California in person for at least one BlizzCon. Because when I say it will change your life, I am not kidding. BlizzCon, from the very first one that I went to, changed my life in a very profound way. And it will change yours too. I have no way to know exactly how it will change yours, but I practically guarantee it will change your life. This commercial for BlizzCon brought to you by Realm Maintenance Podcast. But yeah, again, I'm rambling. This has been the longest RNG segment ever. Well stated, and we'll bring it to an end. Just thank you to everyone who was part of BlizzCon. And to those who weren't, I look forward to meeting you next year, hopefully. And that sound means your update is complete. It's time to press the play button and catch up on all the BlizzCon stuff I missed, about, well, you know, two-thirds of it, via the virtual ticket. I am so grateful for that thing, you have no idea. If this is your first time listening, of course you can find this podcast on most podcasting apps, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. As always, I encourage you to check out realm-maintenance.com, where you can find not only the weekly podcast roundup, but a directory of most podcasts out there covering your favorite Blizzard franchises. If you're a podcaster and have news about your show or promo to send in, or if you're a listener with questions about Blizzard games or podcasts for those games, send those emails to realmpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow the show on Twitter @RealmPodcast. Or follow myself @Rowow, spelled R-H-O-W-O-W. Realm Maintenance is back in 2 weeks on November 21st. There's plenty to talk about as the Battle for Azeroth looms on the horizon, and you can expect an interview with a WoW podcast to focus on that and much more. Until then, I've been Ro, you've been you, and Realm Maintenance has been completed. This podcast has been a presentation of Realm Maintenance Productions, copyright 2017, and is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. You can find more great shows at frozenfoxmedia.com. Certain audio portions of this podcast belong entirely to Blizzard Entertainment, and no copyright infringement is intended. The show's theme music is a cover of Call to Arms by YouTuber Thizkits. Thanks once again to Blizzard Entertainment, Mike Donay, and Jamaro Kindred for this week's interview. Thanks for your interest, your retweets, and your downloads of this show and others in the Blizzard podcasting community. And as always, thanks to you for listening.
This podcast is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. Visit us at frozenfoxmedia.com for information about this and all the other content we offer. You can also find us on Twitter @FrozenFoxMedia. Frozen Fox Media, cool content for the gaming community.